Hi, welcome to NWR Connectivity. I'm your host, Neil Ronahan, and joining me, as always, John Raritan.
We put so much effort into deciding what episode number it was, and then you didn't say it.
This is episode 362.
There you go. Thank you.
And this is,
like,
this
literally
is a special
just
episode.
Finished talking about it.
This is a special episode because we're going to talk about The Legend of Zelda Skyward Sword for our ongoing 3D Zelda Game Club in the march up to The Legend of Zelda Tears of the Kingdom on May 12th. And because this is what we do for 3D Zelda Game Clubs, and I guess Game Clubs in general, we got Alex DeFreitas.
Howdy, I like loft wings.
And we got Matt Zawadniak.
This is embarrassing. I thought we were going to talk about Castlevania Dawn of Sorrow. There's still time.
I'm trying to remember. I think Portrait of Ruin is the one on DS that I did not enjoy at all. Order of Ecclesia
is... There's four on DS.
Yeah. Because Order of Ecclesia is like the last Ego one. And that one is like a Metroid Prime 3 situation where it is... It's like they went in a different direction, but it kind of works. But people were like, I don't know. This is different than it was before. But anyway, yeah, we're going to talk about Skyward Sword. But before we talk about Skyward Sword, we happen to be recording this episode the evening after Eiji Inuma blessed us with 10 minutes of hot narrated gameplay from The Legend of Zelda Tears of the Kingdom. The first time we saw any type of actual gameplay from this game. John, you have spent the past 14 hours deep in the trenches of analysis. Your video is alive. You take the reins and we'll all hold on.
It hasn't been 14 hours since the video came out. There should be a video already on. And well, there is, because I just put it there. There's a video already on Nintendo World Report TV that goes over some of this, but we'll just sort of freeform it here. I'm a big fan of what this video did. I respect
me
that,
too.
Like, they didn't need to. We've talked about this a lot before, but like, Tears of the Kingdom, it's going to sell okay. Like, not really a concern for Nintendo. So they didn't, but we've talked before about how, like, they really haven't shown us what's legitimately different about this game. And so I appreciated, just from a fan perspective, being able to watch this and just have someone be like, all right, there's lots of new stuff, but like, here's some examples. But like, perfect. Great. That's exactly what I wanted. Really didn't feel like it spoiled anything for me. But I just got to look at like Link's new abilities, a lot of which had already been shown, but we just got to kind of dig into them a little bit. And then we got to see the Banjo-Kazooie nuts and bolts, vehicle crafting, which I'm super excited about. The first thing we saw, we start out in the Ash Swamp, just to the west of Fort Titano. It took me a while to figure out where we were at the beginning of that trailer, but I found it. And so we get to see a little bit of Breath of the Wild Hyrule as it has advanced.
I wonder, because there's been talk about, I don't know if there's going to be a time jump in game or if there's like starts off and it's been 5 years since the events of Breath of the Wild and the world is rebuilding.
The world is rebuilding, but if it's been 5 years, then they need to step it up. There is, like, we don't spend a lot of time on the surface in this, but both of the areas that we do see, that area by Fort Hitano, and then later we get to this area just a little north of Lake Hylia. In both of those areas, we see, like, construction in progress. You can see there's sort of these stone foundations with like building supplies on them. One of them has an actual little like signpost beside it. It reminded me of an Animal Crossing when a new villager is moving in and they have a little signpost next to it saying who it's going to be. It looked very much like that. I almost wonder if there's going to be some sort of mini game related to like rebuilding stuff.
That's where this game kind of inherits something that I thought was weird about Breath of the Wild, where outside of like specifically Castletown, there's really not that much that's in ruin that needs to be repaired. Just like a couple forts and that's it.
Well, there's a lot of stuff that I think we see some stuff kind of expanded out in Age of Calamity, like out into Hyrule Fields. There's a lot more like villages,
like a market
and things. Yeah.
There's that entire like Daya village that's in like a swamp area now.
Yeah, or... that's the one that's over by Lon Lon Ranch, right?
Yeah, yeah.
I believe so.
That Lon Lon Ranch, I mean, whether or not that's going to be something more than just a reference, like that area was kind of in ruins.
Yeah, that's actually something that I thought Age of Calamity did that was neat, is that on the big map where you can get to, like, you know, the blacksmiths and the various like shops and things you can interact with just on the map, all of those are in locations where there's actually a ruined settlement in Breath of the Wild, which I thought was really cool. So like there is stuff, like, you're right, like the castle town is by far like the biggest thing. And I unfortunately, based on the condition that Hyrule Castle appears to be in the footage we've seen so far, I don't think we're seeing a rebuilt castle town just yet. I kind of hope not, because if they did rebuild it, then like that just immediately got wrecked.
So it's like, we just finished it.
Perfect. And then just whoosh, the castle comes up out of the ground. Yeah.
Be kind of funny, though.
It would be funny. But yeah, so that's the main changes we see on the ground. Once again, extremely limited look at what's on the ground, but that's the main thing. I did also notice that all the guardians have been cleaned up, because that area outside of Fort Hateno is that swampy area that's just littered with guardians. And all of the guardians are gone now. There also looks like there's some evidence when you first get there, you're at like the Dueling Peaks, but there's some evidence in the mountainside that like people have been like mining stone, presumably to build these settlements, which I thought was a cool subtle touch. But yeah, that's about it for new stuff on the ground. But then we get to see abilities. So we got the recall ability, which lets you fly into the air.
I wonder, because I think we've seen it a couple other times in the other trailers where like they do show it, and it does explain one of the clips from the trailers of like the rock just going through the sky, where like a rock will fall down and use the, is it recall or is it rewind? I forget exactly.
Recall is
so okay. So the ability is called recall, but the UI element says rewind.
Okay.
That's confusing. But I recall from an earlier trailer, there's like a rock rolling back up a hill. So it looks like there will be more uses than just going up into the sky.
Yeah. And I wondered, like, I mean, is this like, we saw a rock fall from the sky. Are those going to land? Like, is there going to consistently be a rock that lands on that cliff? Or is it like the stars that fall in Breath of the Wild, where it's just like you're walking around, it's like, oh, there's one. Like do you have to find one
there? Right. What the hell?
I wonder if Ascend will be able to do that.
I had that thought. Yeah, exactly. Like, I wonder, surely not at the beginning. Like, I'm guessing Ascend can't just shoot you up onto an island, but it kind of feels like a natural thing for that to have like an upgrade, where eventually you can just be standing on the surface, aim up at an island, and just whack up there.
I think that's another thing where in an earlier trailer, I think they show that off
with going through a sky island. Him coming up through the bottom of a sky island, but we couldn't tell like if there was stuff below him or not. So it's vague, but that feels like a very natural thing that you would do. We also got the concept of combining items into more and more ridiculous weapons, which I'm super about.
It's awesome. I do love that they were like, okay, you guys are worried about item durability. What if you could just take this stick and put another stick on it, and then it's just a really big stick and it lasts a little longer?
It does improve the durability. It's kind of like I made the comment that in like a lot of old like Bethesda RPGs, if you had two weapons with low durability, you could combine them and raise the durability of them. It is kind of that, just in a ridiculous way.
Yeah.
Which I kind of like.
And it's more versatile, where it's like, maybe I want a hammer, and sometimes I would keep a hammer in my inventory just because it's nice to have it for mining. In this, like, if you have a tree branch, if you have a boulder, you have a hammer, and I imagine that would be able to be used
that's for great. Mining.
It does a lot to like make the disposable weapons like feel more, you know, more worthwhile.
Having like the Korok leaf, how you can, you know, put that onto a weapon and probably do gusts of winds that way.
Yeah, there's the chemistry system is worked into the weapon construction, which is cool. And I do think, like, kind of to Matt's point, like, I do think it kind of feeds into this, at least what the first one was trying to do, that idea that you were scavenging for things. Maybe during a fight like this, I kind of feel, once again, probably will be more useful early on in the game. But who knows? Maybe you can combine the two best weapons in the game in the late game, and just have some sort of weird monstrosity. Like, can I combine a sword and another sword? Does it turn into a Darth Maul lightsaber? Like, what happens when I do that?
And I imagine that the Master Sword just being a hilt,
yeah,
is probably prime, like,
oh, like you can just stick anything on the master, like it's a Master Sword, but with a stick and a rock on the end.
Yeah.
Perfect.
Yeah, I think a lot of the appeal of this is going to be decided by, like, how much of this does it just totally let you cook? And how much of it is like, oh no, these two things can't be combined. Because, like,
yeah,
it's, like, it almost feels impossible to say maybe literally everything can be combined, but, like, that's almost what I want from it here.
Yeah. And
yeah,
I would kind of, given what they've done in the past, that might be what they do.
I could see it being viable if it's like things are put into categories instead, like,
yeah,
you don't, like, this group of things gives you the homing arrows.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. When it's, yeah, like, can I combine two things that are, I mean, I guess they combined the pitchfork and the long stick, which seemed like they would be the same weapon type. Because I was just thinking, like, can I combine a claymore and a claymore? What does that do?
Yeah. Yeah. We haven't, double, I mean, we haven't claymore, seen that.
Yeah. Yeah. I, no, it's a great mechanic. And then feeding into that, we had the Ultra Hand, which is a great name. 10 points to whoever suggested yes, that. That. Yeah, it's just, it's Banjo-Kazooie nuts and bolts, just straight up.
Really, it's just that.
Like, it's the incredible interface even looks like Banjo-Kazooie nuts and bolts.
Yeah. I'm really happy that, like, because that last trailer during the February Direct, it was kind of like, it's just Banjo-Kazooie nuts and bolts. And it is, they just put that in the Zelda game.
I'm looking at the footage right now. It's so funny that, like, they literally have the rotate UI from Blender.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, the universal, like, what, blue for Z axis, X for, or red for X axis. Yeah. Like, it's, yeah.
Well, they flipped it up by, like, the X axis is blue and the Z axis is red.
Yeah. No, it looks awesome. They have the item, like, the fans they showed had like a charge to them, so you would hit them and it would deplete a battery, and then it looks like it just recharges once it's
out. Yeah, I mean, it seems like it kind of functions like a stamina meter, but just so, like, you couldn't be on that boat forever, there is a limit to how far you can go,
right?
Which, honestly,
well, especially since they show it, like,
makes sense.
They show it, like, putting the propellers aiming down and just flying up into the air.
Yeah.
Though I will say Banjo-Kazooie nuts and bolts didn't have a stamina meter on the fans. It could fly forever. Maybe the better game, who knows.
And that was, I mean, yeah, Ascend, I do love that, just because of the, like, the expansion that it does on just the exploration. And that's really what every ability that they showed off highlighted for me, is that, like, they kind of looked at this and be like, okay, like, what were the things that people might have had pain points with? Like, okay, sometimes climbing, working with the stamina meter, that was a little difficult. What if we gave people an ability to kind of circumvent that in some spots, where you can go inside a cave and just shoot up, and then you go through the top of the cave and wind up on top of a mountain? Like,
yeah,
it's such a, it's like, and even, like, just looking at the visual of it, like, it looks kind of preposterous, but it all fits. Like, I'm really excited by what they've shown, and even more so just also what wasn't shown, which is presumably a whole lot.
I noticed there's also the weather forecast on the bottom. I assume most people didn't notice that because they clearly didn't notice that in Breath of the Wild.
Hey.
I turn on Pro HUD. I don't see any of that.
I forgot to double check. Every time I looked at it intentionally, Aonuma just had a clear blue sky in his forecast.
I feel like that
may have been a developer. Like, I want that build.
Yeah.
I kept trying to get comparison footage for the Breath of the Wild stuff, and I'd be like, man, he always has clear skies. I have to, like, wait, like, start a campfire and be like, all right, I need a noon that has clear skies.
Well, just John, it is surprisingly easy to hack your weather in Breath of the Wild.
Boah, that's cheating. No, I like the weather system in Breath of the Wild. It just makes it more difficult for comparisons.
Yeah. After we've all seen, you know, Anuma's streamer debut, how are we feeling about Tears of the Kingdom?
I'm feeling a little better. I mean, it's not like I wasn't gonna buy it, but I'm feeling a bit more interested This is what I needed to see to start kind of building up into that hype cycle. Because the disappointing thing about this game is I feel like the like theorist community has gotten so much right about the plot that like I kind of feel like I have a better idea of what this one's doing plot wise than I did with Breath of the Wild. And so I'm more interested in what it can change up gameplay wise. Not that I'm not excited to hear like Matt Mercer just rule as Ganondorf, but you know, I'd like some new gameplay.
Do that. He played Ganondorf.
He is reprising his role as Ganondorf.
Bizarre, man. That will be Brawl still paying off all these years later.
Yeah.
The point that I'm at is kind of like I liked everything we saw today a lot. It's just the thing for me is that the stuff today wasn't the stuff I was worried about. This is kind of the stuff that I already felt kind of secure in assuming they were going to do a lot with and make better. And the thing that that's worrying me is still like the world itself, so much of it still being the same, because that's where it's like, I don't know if I'm going to feel like this is really the next game after Breath of the Wild or kind of Breath of the Wild remake.
I think it really depends on what they do with the sky. And I know there's been teases about like more underground stuff too.
Which I'm hopeful about, but there was like, there's a moment during today's footage when it's like, he was up on the sky island looking out at the landscape down on the surface. And I see the dragon in the distance and it's like, oh, I've seen one of those before. What else have you got?
Those dragons were moving weirdly slow.
They also seemed to have a different course, so like they seemed to go around the sky. Because
they saw the one that you see is Nadra. She was not where she was supposed to be. And the fact that they were moving slowly almost makes it seem like maybe you're supposed to be able to get to them more easily. Like, I wonder if they have more functionality in the sky stuff.
Just the thing that just keeps giving me a hang up on this game, and it's like I'm sure it's going to be quite good. I'm sure I'm going to enjoy it and largely rank it relatively high as far as Zelda games go, but like it feels at this point more like the game I wish Breath of the Wild already was instead of something new for me to get really hyped about.
But I think that's also like I'm of two minds of it, because thinking back to when Breath of the Wild came out, what I really wanted after that game came out was Majora's Mask. Give me the Majora's Mask to Breath of the Wild, much like Majora's Mask was to Ocarina of Time. That does not seem to be the game that we're getting. It seems like we're getting, I don't know if this is a dig, like, are we getting the Twilight Princess to Ocarina of Time? I don't know.
I would say Twilight Princess is even more different than this.
I would say
this is the Oracle of Seasons to Link's Awakening.
Yeah. I mean, that works too. Or John and I were talking about this offline earlier. It's A Link Between Worlds to Link to the Past, which all of these games that we've rattled off here, except for maybe Twilight Princess, are all very good games. And I assume that I will enjoy Tears of the Kingdom much like I have enjoyed pretty much every other Zelda game. But there is an X factor of surprise that, I mean, like, some of these abilities, and I have a lot of faith that there will be more. Like, we still don't really know what's going on with his arm. There is like that we didn't even mention that the Zonai, the Lost Tribe, seems like, you know, Zonai confirmed. There's some items that drop. It seems like some of the enemies that were shown off in this footage are related to the Zonai. There's Zonai iconography all over all of the footage that we've seen. There's an X factor there that maybe we will get more changes, more surprises, more things that are unexpected. But I think maybe where I slightly differ from you, Matt, and I don't think we're really that far off, is that I'm kind of fine with the base overworld being pretty similar, because it is looking to see how things have changed from the original game. Like, that is something that is interesting and exciting to me. Because it is a, you know, world that I've explored, and seeing how that's changed much of the way that was kind of cool about A Link Between Worlds, except for this is, you know, much, much grander. And I think if they pull off the Sky Islands in a good way, if there is some kind of underground or whatever shrines are going to become in this game, if we have full dungeons, that could be a way to kind of differentiate more between what Breath of the Wild was and what this game will be.
I don't expect this game to have full dungeons, but if it does have full dungeons, then that like instantly throws away any concern I have about like not being sequel enough.
Yeah.
It is bothersome that they haven't shown off whatever the shrine or dungeon element would be. Like, I feel like that's something that they would show off at this point.
We got some kind of hint of it if you look at the mini map, too, because there are like caves that have check marks on them.
Okay. Yep.
There's some sort of small structure on top on like the mountainside of Dueling Peaks that looks maybe shrine-esque. The actual shrine that used to be there is gone, but there's another structure there that could be something shrine related. I did also want to throw out that like some of those sky islands are roughly the size of the Great Plateau. Like, this doesn't look to be like, you know, Wind Waker sized islands Skyward Sword. Or Skyward Sword, right? Like, those islands are sizable land masses with room for a lot. So it looks like some of them appear to be kind of blocked off by like these dark storm clouds that I'm assuming is some sort of progress gate. So I think there's room for the sky to be a significant amount of that overworld. And if it does turn out that there's a lot of underground stuff too, you may ultimately get between those two an entirely new overworld. In addition to the, and that's what I'm hoping is that it is Breath of the Wild plus an additional similar amount of landmass between.
Yeah, if it was like Breath of the Wild Hyrule plus half of that throughout the sky.
If you give me, because then it's like when Pokemon has Kanto in it, right? Like it's like yes, the old thing is still here, but there's also an entire new game's worth of stuff. Then it's like rad, awesome. But yeah, if it's mostly old surface world that isn't that different, then like that's kind of a bummer. But I'm optimistic.
Yeah. It is the kind of thing where the Zelda team's been on a pretty good run. And this is also another thing John and I were talking about earlier, is that this is kind of like the conclusion that Anuma reached after Skyward Sword, when there was, you know, we celebrated the 10th anniversary of that weird Wii U Direct in January 2013. Where Anuma kind of laid out, like, this is what we're doing with Zelda. Like, we need to chart a new path. Like, this, what they did in A Link Between Worlds, what they did in Breath of the Wild, it seems like it's all kind of funneling to what Tears of the Kingdom looks like it's going to be. And, I mean, like, I think that regardless of how this game is, it's been a big success, that, you know, that 2013 refocus on what Zelda's going to be. But Tears of the Kingdom has that chance, if it does surprise and delight in a similar way as Breath of the Wild, where it could be like the crown jewel of the Zelda team.
And I'm totally cool with Zelda just becoming an immersive sim, by the way.
Yeah.
No, it's awesome.
Like, if it could like, be an immersive sim with dungeons, that'd be
that would be nice.
Best case scenario.
But I think that would definitely be nice. But like I think about like how. The best quote that I've heard about immersive sims comes from an H Bomber Guy video, where he says like that the only real definition of immersive sim is, can you solve a problem intended to be solved with a gun by stacking a bunch of boxes and going over it? And like, I see that concept all over this.
Yeah,
because there are so many boxes to stack. It's metaphorically speaking
and literally.
Literally speaking, yeah. So I think that this even if I'm concerned about like where I'm going to be doing all this stuff, the stuff that I'm going to be doing looks incredibly good.
And it's also like, just think about, I don't think there were Korok seeds seen in this footage. There weren't shrines. Like, there's a lot
of Justin's letters.
Yeah.
Well, we did see I didn't mention it in the video at all because I didn't care, but you do see a Korok at one point.
Yeah. But I think I was talking to Justin about that actually. And
he seems to be a quest NPC.
It seems like somebody that you're talking to as opposed to somebody that you found.
He could have been somebody that was already found, and that's why he's just hanging out.
I mean, that could be the case, but it's like, we haven't seen that in the, those things might be implemented in a far different way, which if they are, like, I mean, there's the chance that like the frame, like the setting is the same, but it could be the way that you interact with the world is completely different.
And it seems like it already is, because there's no like Sheikah slate. Everything that you seem to be doing is with the hand abilities.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah, we haven't seen any of the old abilities make a return.
Yeah.
I mean, Ultra Hand is like Magnesis on steroids.
Yeah.
Plus you can fuse things.
Inspired by what you had.
Yeah, yeah, there's similarities, but it doesn't look like you have any of your old abilities still. I was going to say, my dream scenario is that there's still Koroks, but if you collect all of the seeds, it deletes your save game.
And uninstalls.
Yep.
Yeah, there's like 1,700 of them. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't think there were enough Korok seeds, frankly.
Yeah,
they should have more. Be tripping all over them.
Yep.
And we haven't seen the inventory yet.
We saw a little bit of it.
We saw like the quick menu. Yeah. Which looks about the same.
Yeah. Which is just show me that menu. Show me that hot menu. And I hope you got my letters, Zelda.
I've noticed that like on the UI, like you got like the weapon and bow buttons, and then there's just a materials button there. I assume that's a materials button and not a food button.
It is an apple.
Is it on the face buttons or on the directional buttons?
It's on the D-pad. Well, yeah, it's an apple, but that seems to be the button that he presses to pull up materials when he's fusing things.
Okay.
Yeah, in Breath of the Wild, that's the Sheikah slate change between what Sheikah slate thing you're using.
Now appears to be on L.
Well, I'm assuming that was always the use the Sheikah slate button. So I'm assuming that's still what that does. I wonder how you change abilities for that.
It could be tap versus hold.
Maybe.
It was a toggle menu from Skyward Sword.
Honestly, this game could probably stand to do with some radial menus in certain situations. Not just a line of things that you have to tab through one at a time. Or give me touchscreen menus. Let me tap things in my inventory.
It's a shame that this was never released on a system with a touchscreen.
Yeah.
No.
What a shame.
Zelda could learn a lot from No Man's Sky on Switch. Weirdly, one of the few Switch games with a functional touchscreen inventory. Yeah. Is that enough on Tears of the Kingdom gameplay?
It's almost 30 minutes. So
I think it is.
Okay. Back to you, Neil.
All right. So now let's talk about The Legend of Zelda Skyward Sword. This is, the 3D Zelda game before Breath of the Wild. After this, boys, I hope you're ready for just going into a Zelda coma for months. I'm getting really excited to start my Breath of the Wild replay. But before we get there, we got to talk about Skyward Sword. Came out on the Wii back in November of 2011. I guess to start it off, as someone who I was in the room when they first showed anything about this game, back at E3 2009, there was a behind closed doors, like, I think they called them like developer roundtables, which was kind of a misnomer because it was basically just like a presentation in an auditorium. They showed off an image of Link and Fi at this event that was behind closed doors and said not to show it off. Well, Nintendo World Report posted that image.
What's the story behind that?
Yeah, like what's the logic?
I don't know.
Can you tell the story without naming any names?
I'll blink twice for
okay.
Can I learn the story privately?
yes. You know, everybody come talk to me after the show. I'll tell you what happened.
Can we make this a Patreon exclusive story?
Yeah, Nintendo's not going to pay us to find out what we said.
Yeah.
And if they did, joke's on them.
Yeah. Thanks for the money, man. But anyway, so it was like the night of that event, then we leaked it. But then like the next day or two, Nintendo wound up posting the image. You're welcome, world.
Probably as a direct result.
Yeah. Honestly, yeah, probably. And then it wasn't, we didn't see it for a while. Then it kind of had its grand reveal at E3 2010. I think that's when the name Skyward Sword was given to it at E3 2010. There was a demo there that was more of just a sandbox exploration of using Wii Motion Plus to control Link, use the sword, fight some Dooku Babas, all that good stuff. Then it showed up again at E3 2011, or at another E3 2011, where there was a demo that was more representative of the final game. I think there was like a Loftwing section playable there. I think a boss fight with Gurahim, and something from like an early dungeon. And then it finally came out in November of 2011. And since I do have a really hands-on history with like the development and release of this game, I reviewed it at launch on Wii back in 2011. And I mean, it was the first Zelda game that I reviewed early and played early in any way, shape, or form. The anecdote that I definitely shared when we talked about this game when Skyward Sword HD came out is I was playing, I don't even know the name of the thing, I just have it in the notes as the big toad motherfucker.
The imprisoned?
Yeah, the imprisoned. Where I was playing that game for review, and I might have exclaimed during the imprisoned, like the third imprisoned fight, that like, you know, anybody who gives this game a 10 out of 10 is crazy. And then I gave it a 10 out of 10. Although I have learned, and we stumbled upon this when HD came out, I did not optimally fight the imprisoned when I first played the game. I forget exactly what, but when I played it in HD, I was like, this is way easier. I think there was like a part of it that was that you could damage that I didn't realize you could damage.
Did you go directly to the head? Was that the thing you did?
I think so.
Yeah, a lot of times you can skip the toes.
Yeah, I think I made sure to hit every toe when I didn't have to hit every toe. But yeah, that is my experience with Skyward Sword. I experienced it before it came out, loved the shit out of it, gave it a 10 out of 10. You can see my review. I think you can even see some blog posts about my progress with the game from that era. But John, let's kick over to you. What was your experience with Skyward Sword, your expectations for it coming out, and your first time playing the game back on Wii?
So 2011 would have been, well, November of 2011 would have been my freshman year of college, going into my only full year of college before I dropped out in the second year. But yeah, this was one that I pre-ordered, got it day one. Me and my younger brother just sort of played it in tandem, alternating, trying not to get too far ahead of each other. And I absolutely loved this game. I thought the controls were incredible. I thought
so good.
The first time I fought Gurahim, and realized like, oh, it's just a sword fight. Like it's a sword fight, just one on one. I have to watch what he's doing. He's watching what I'm doing. This is great. I remember the little mini game of putting the boss key in the door, where you have this kind of abstract 3D shape and you have to figure out how to fit it into the door, and it's just one-to-one maps. Like you can just sort of hold the Wii remote and just move it completely 360 in any direction, and it just maps to that object, and so you're just sort of manipulating it as if you were actually holding it. I thought that was incredible. Like I'd never seen a game do that before, because this was you know, it was Wii Motion Plus. It was was it the first thing I played with Wii Motion Plus? Like it was,
It was like a year and a half after Wii Motion Plus came out.
I don't think I got Wii Motion Plus right away.
Yeah, you're not. So I think this was the first thing I guy.
No,
Tiger Woods, baby, let's go.
No, Wii Motion Plus was for was for this Red Steel 2 and Conduit 2. That was what you got Wii Motion Plus for. But all of that stuff was just so, it really felt like it was doing what I had hoped the Wii would do. And yeah, it was one of those Wii games where I would be like, okay, it's a boss battle, time to stand up. And it was awesome. I loved it.
I think that was a line in my original review, was something about like, this is what we dreamed of when the Wii came out. Like this is the sort of game that we wanted.
Right.
And I think I learned shortly after the game came out and everybody was like, this sucks. Maybe it was the sort of game that I wanted and not what a lot of people
I think
wanted.
People bought. I don't understand who bought the Wii that wasn't me. Like, like I look at Skyward Sword and I'm like, yep, this is exactly what I hoped this console would do.
Yeah.
And then I have people who are like, I don't want to move this thing to do what the sword does. I'm like, why did you buy this?
Like, yeah,
what?
Like, this is
what
this
possibly
is
could have possessed you.
It's this the culmination of everything that they did on Wii. Like, you even had bowling with bombs and like the archery and like everything fit together with what they were experimenting with motion controls throughout that entire system, which the fact that I'm saying experiment might be part of the reason why people don't want controller experimentation in their Zelda games. They just want dungeons.
And dual analog controls were an experiment the first time they were done, too.
And one that people didn't like.
They hated it.
Yeah. Yep. That was I guess I might not have been the only person that saw that thread talking about like on Twitter, talking about the history of different types of dual analog controls on consoles in the 90s and early 2000s.
One of the first ones was a Aliens game made by Argonaut for PS1.
Yeah. Yep.
Yep. People thought it was unplayable.
Yep. And that's basically the way that every game controls now.
Yep.
Matt, you said that you didn't have many contemporary memories, but do you have anything about any like what was your impression of this game? Whether pre-release or right after release or whatever.
It's honestly really tough for me because I won't go too into it just because like it's a bit of a downer. But I was having a rough time in my life when Skyward Sword came out, and it's just generally very, very difficult for me to pull on particular memories from that time. There are specifics that I remember here and there. I do know that I liked the game, but as far as like how I felt on like more specific things, it's always just kind of been like if someone mentions something specific, then like how does it make me feel when I hear it? And that's it's very tough for me to know. Like,
was your reason you were the only person that played it in the past or played it to completion in the past 30 days? I believe I know John and I both played it back when it came out on Switch, and I think Alex, you
same,
played through
yeah.
it then too. Was this recent playthrough, was that the only time that you played it since around launch?
Yeah, it was. And there are a lot of things that I was like kind of surprised not to have any memory of, like when the harp shows up, it's like, oh, I like legitimately did not know this existed.
It's because the harp isn't like a nothing burger of a part of the game. It just feels like, we need an instrument. Shit.
It really is. Like, and it was weird because like I felt muscle memory telling me to like move the controller back and forth for it. But
yeah,
like,
and it's,
just,
I don't even think it's bad. It's just that like, why is this here?
It's very strange.
It exists.
I've always liked the game, but I don't really know like, you know, like to what extent sometimes, and like what in particular, what was like what landed for me, what didn't land for me, except for the sliding puzzle dungeon, because I have always hated sliding puzzles in general.
Such a damn good dungeon.
It objectively is. I just really hate sliding puzzles.
Alex, I believe you are also part of the anti-sliding puzzle contingent.
Yes, I hate sliding puzzles.
But
which dungeon is the sliding puzzle dungeon?
It's the last one.
The one in Skyloft.
Oh. The one where the dungeon itself is the sliding puzzle.
Yeah.
That's fine.
Yeah, I really like that dungeon. Maybe not dungeon's my favorite great. In this,
yeah.
but I love it.
Yeah, it's good.
So, neat. Alex... your pre-release memories, your launch day memories, etc.
Yeah, so it's actually kind of similar a lot to Twilight Princess, where around that time is when I really got back into following video games as an industry, mostly because of Skyward Sword, because this is at that time it was what, like a 5-year gap between Twilight Princess and Skyward Sword. Yep.
Yeah, almost.
And that was like
day.
A third of my life. So it felt like a really long wait. And now, you know, Tears of the Kingdom's around the corner. It's like that was a 6-year or 7-year almost.
Six-year wait. Yeah.
Yeah, 6-year wait. And it feels like no time has passed by. It's ridiculous.
Got me wondering how many more of these I get to play before I die.
Yeah.
That was a brief aside, a Packer website that I follow, like the guys are in their 40s, like one of them was talking about how, like, yeah, we sat down, we were drinking a beer, and we were just like, we're probably on the back half of the amount of Packer games that we get to see. And I'm just like, oh shit, am I gonna have to fix that soon with video games? Yeah, like this, yeah. This is gonna be like the, yeah, you know, I only got so many Mario games left, guys.
It's weird to think about, there's gonna be Zelda games that I won't be able to play, and that thought does terrify me.
But that I since I just turned 30, that is like all I've been thinking about.
Turning 35 is your next crisis point. I'm there, boy, now. I
can't wait.
If I go down, I'm taking Nintendo with me. So yeah. There will be no Zelda after. Yeah.
Anyways, on to happier thoughts. I was very excited for Skyward Sword when it was.
I'm curious, like, because this is the thing where, like, I don't have a total read on this, because this is like, I started writing for Nintendo World Report at 2008, and by the time this game was announced at E3 2009, like, I was at E3. Like, this was, you know, the era where, like, I was in college and be like, I'm gonna be a professional video games journalist, and I made very much better choices to be where I am today. But like Alex, what are your memories of when Skyward Sword, when you first heard of it?
When I first heard of it, I remember that image, the one that we leaked.
You're
I
welcome.
Do remember.
Yeah. I do remember that one too. That one's hard to forget.
I remember thinking, like, why does this character look like the fairy from Wind Waker?
Mm-hmm.
And ZeldaDungeon.net, a website that I still do use on occasion. I was semi-active in the forums and reading up on a lot of articles. And
yeah, I will say, like, things like that where it's like there's visible evidence of the time, I remember those things really well. Stuff that I can still go back and see. That image was like the thing.
Yeah, there's nothing to really to pull from it. What did we know that the Master Sword was going to be personified by that character at the time?
Think they hinted at it, but not specific. I think it was the kind of thing like they said, like, oh, the Master Sword, it's going to be about the origin of the Master Sword. And then you saw that image and you're like, OK, so that thing's the Master Sword.
Yeah. And this was the beginning of my deep dives into the lore of Zelda, because Hyrule Historia was on its way of being released, and like, yeah, we got like the Japanese version out, and then people were already translating it, and the timeline theorists were coming out the woodwork. It was a very exciting time to be a Zelda fan, and I really enjoyed playing it. I still think it's so good. I went back and played Ancient Cistern last night, and
so good.
What a fantastic dungeon. Still the best. Still the absolute best.
I think Ancient Cistern might be, like, if it's not the best, it's top two or three.
I struggle to think of something that even comes close to Ancient Cistern in my mind. For me, it's the pinnacle.
Ancient Cistern has a plot twist. Like, how many dungeons have a plot twist?
It's as a plot twist that is a reference to classical literature.
Yeah, yep. Like, it's, oh man, what a dungeon!
It's what a both game. like a cool roller coaster dungeon and also a cool puzzle box dungeon where you're moving like the levels up and down.
Yeah,
you only have to do it a couple of times, but it's still so neat when you do and you find the boss game, then you go all the way back up and fight the boss. And one of my favorite bosses is Galactos.
Yeah.
I still have vivid memories of being down to like one heart and just viciously like throwing my arm out with the Wii remote to destroy that thing and getting it, and having, it was just such a high when I heard the little girl giggle that inexplicably happens when he dies. There's a lot that I like about this game, but my big takeaway is that it was a little too long, and that I really missed an overworld, and the sky just did not scratch the same itch that the great ocean did. Mm-hmm.
The sky is bad. I feel like we can all agree.
It's quite bad.
Mm-hmm.
But I do like Loftwings. I kind of want to see a Loftwing again.
Well, the Loftwings are a nice thing to have in the lore for sure.
Yeah, yep. I would maybe Loftwings will make a surprise return in Tears of the Kingdom. They'd fit in, like, it'd work. It'd
There's
be
a
awesome
lot of sky stuff, man.
Yeah. Who gets Skyloft? Put a city in the sky. But not that city in the sky.
Not the Skyloft. The correct pick the correct city in the sky. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, are we gonna see Skyloft come back in Tears of the Kingdom? We might.
Well,
there will probably be a reference to it, and there will be an island in the sky that is similar in shape to some part of Skyloft, I would imagine, at a minimum.
I think we've talked about this before, but Twilight Princess, the lore of Twilight Princess very heavily implies that the people of Skyloft are the Uku.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I think Skyloft is the city in the sky. I'm sorry. Things went downhill after Link left.
Dag.
That which is something you could say about multiple points in the canon.
Yeah, it tends to go downhill after Link leaves. Yep.
So then Skyward Sword came out. It was a game that reviewed very, very well. Mm-hmm. But there definitely was a backlash. Sales weren't really there. I don't think you can really blame sales totally on the game itself, because it was just the Wii fad had died by the holiday 2011. We were on the cusp of new consoles like PlayStation 4 and Xbox One. At this point, this was like PlayStation 3 with their comeback story that you didn't expect, where that system actually like did very well at the end of the day. And there was it was a long, hard look at Zelda. It led us to Breath of the Wild and then Tears of the Kingdom. But then Skyward Sword came back. Somehow Palpatine returned, so did Skyward Sword. They figured out how to map Wii controls to the Switch, and in 2021, almost 10 years after the original game on Wii came out on Nintendo Switch, I find it to be a very good version of that game. I think the Wii controls are still the best way to play that, but at the end of the day, I think the Switch is the most accessible version, and it probably is definitive in that regard.
And so this does make some nice little quality of life adjustments too.
Yeah,
this is where I have a lot of issues with Skyward Sword, because of the HD version. I think that the motion controls are rendered moot. I think that it's the culmination of the Wii, but it's also a failure, because everything that you can do with motion controls, you can do better with the stick. And it's not like the stick is that great. I would much prefer traditional face buttons for attacking and doing stuff, but it's faster, it's more efficient, it's more immediate to do it with the button controls on Switch, that I don't see myself ever going really back for motion controls. Other than the novelty.
Yeah, I gotta say, I'm with Alex on this one, where it's like objectively, Skyward Sword is a game made for the motion controls. But I view that as like kind of a self-made problem in a way, where there's nothing in this game that I feel like had to be motion controls. It's just a game that was built around these motion controls. And so it's awkward on a traditional controller. But like, I don't think the motion... I could see how people say like it like actually swinging the Wii remote and like having the sword swing is appealing. I can understand when someone says that, but that doesn't appeal to me personally, especially since it isn't truly one to one with your motion in the way that like modern VR would be. So I end up feeling like I would have preferred the game to have not been a motion game.
I think what you guys are both getting at is something that, and I think Alex kind of said it, that like Skyward Sword might have, it was a celebration of what Nintendo did on Wii. It might have also been the death knell of motion controls. Because I think the reality is that motion controls, despite how big the Wii was, it's something that it was a fad, and it's receded back into the niche. Matt, you brought up VR. That's the same thing. We're like, yeah, it's come a long way. A lot of those motion controls, like I have the Meta Quest, and it, you know, like those controllers work. It's very nice. But there's a big, they're not the reason why VR is niche. But I think it's part of it why like a lot of those motion controls have receded into being niche things. Like they are not the mainstream that they were for those couple years in the mid 2000s. And I think a lot of it comes down to the fact where it's nice. Guess what? Like even Switch Sports, like those controls are nice, but that is not the ideal way that people seem to want to play the majority of video games. Like, Skyward Sword might have been designed for motion controls, but it is something that they were able to, like, you are right in that you could have made that game and just had it be like normal ass controls with some tweaks here and there, and it probably would have worked. Maybe it's a square peg round hole at the end of the day. But I do agree with you guys that it, in the context of Skyward Sword HD, yeah, just play with the damn button controls.
Yeah, and it is very funny to me that the Switch has been like, Nintendo spent all of these years being like, here's these innovative games that you can only do on our special controllers, and the Switch has just been an experiment in completely proving themselves wrong.
Yep. Yeah, like, we just made a generic ass controller with a terrible D-pad.
I disagree that, like, I don't think that Skyward Sword HD controls universally better than the Wii one.
I would like to clarify, I think the Wii Motion Plus is the best way to play this game. I think that the Switch button controls are better than the Switch motion controls.
That part I agree with. But I will say that I think when they move stuff to the button controls, it breaks a lot of the enemy encounters.
And
makes them extremely easy, because the whole point of those, a lot of how the enemy AI works, is that it's looking at where your sword is, and that's, it's trying to predict where you're going to attack. But you're able to manipulate that stick. Like, you essentially don't have to put it in position first. You can kind of just go. And so as a result, the AI can't predict where you're going to be, and it just breaks how they interact with you.
Which is a feature for me, because those combat encounters, those, that stacks up the time you play.
That was what I bought, like, that idea of being in a sword fight and having the fight be a puzzle was so appealing to me. You know, this was coming off of stuff like Shadow of the Colossus, where like the actual encounter is the dungeon, right?
Yeah.
And that's what appealed to me in Skyward Sword. And so I respect that. Like, I think it's important that we have this version of the game, because, like, it allows it to be ported to anything going forward.
It future proofs it in a way.
Right. But I think if I'm going to play a version of the game, like, I don't feel that it's representative of how the game is intended to play. My dream version would be a version that has Wii Remote, like a controller with a sensor bar, so I don't rely entirely on the gyro. But does use motion controls would be my ideal version of this game.
I would also say it's worth noting that, like, having traditional controls is also an accessibility option for people who, like, are definitely physically unable to do motion controls, which I think is a worthwhile thing to have.
Yes, it's important that this version exists. I do think you can make the one thing that kind of bugs me is that you could essentially fix my issues with this game if you had to move the stick all the way in one direction before moving it to the other in order to get Link to swing, because that would essentially do what you had to do with the analog stick or with the motion controls, and that would solve the AI issue.
I feel like that also complicates the controls in a way that
it does, but they were complicated. I mean, it was a complicated game.
Yeah,
that was, I mean, it's, you know, it, I don't know how much it's worth moving it to regular controls if you have to break a part of the game in the process.
I think that I'm with Alex, where I kind of prefer the fights not really being that puzzle thing, because, like, obviously there are times in a video game where, like, you are in a difficult encounter that should be more of a puzzle. But for trash mobs like Bokoblins, like, I don't want to have to sit down and make an appointment to get through them, because
I mean, you just hold your sword on one side and then quickly loop around to the other and hit them. Like, it's,
that's still more effort than I feel like a Bokoblin deserves.
I'm on team John, because it is, I remember those moments, especially that finale,
when you're going down the hill,
where it is like, that was by that point, and you know, your mileage may vary. John and I are also people that think the controls for Star Fox Zero are good. But I love that moment, because it was like, I had, like, the controls had clicked with me. I had learned the ins and outs of it, and I just went down that hill and kicked the shit out of all of these moblins using the motion controls, and it felt so good.
It's demanding that you knew how to do it fast. Yes. Like, it's It's by now you should know how to do it fast because you're fighting a bunch of guys, so you better know how to do it fast.
Those bokoblins work differently. You don't have to puzzle through them. You can just slash and they die.
They can still block.
Not nearly as much.
Maybe not on the Switch version. Because you don't need to worry about them blocking. On the Wii version, it was definitely a thing of like, there are multiple attacking you. You have to know, you can't just spam through these. You need to know how to do it.
I don't agree that you can't spam through them, but I will also say that's
you
the part
can,
of the,
it's less that, effective. It's going to take you longer.
That's also the part of the game that makes me say, I can't believe they never let us run and swing the sword again.
Yeah. I just had that realization earlier.
That was so frustrating to have the pace breaker of like full stop to swing the sword at that moment.
I do feel like that was the exact moment that somebody went, we should make a Warriors game.
Oh, for sure.
Like, yeah. Zero doubt. Yeah,
I mean,
like that
I
was
believe
the
there's
time.
A moment in Hyrule Warriors that is basically that finale.
That map is there. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Also, it drags the poor Wii to its knees in terms of frame rate. It never intended to render that many bokoblins.
I have a lot of memories of both struggling initially with the Wii Motion Plus controls and then by the back half of the game just being like, oh, this shit's easy, and just like plowing through enemies.
Right. That part is fun to me.
Yeah.
That idea of like, these controls are challenging, I'm going to learn them and then I'm going to master them. Like, that has a lot of appeal to me that this game delivers on.
Since we did bring up VR, I think my ideal version would be a VR motion where it is
awesome.
More one-to-one and in first person. I think some of the issues that I have is that like playing it in third person almost feels like you're puppeting almost like a marionette, where
it
doesn't have that immediate feedback. And whenever I've played VR, even just Among Us VR, there's embodying that character feels very different than just I'm away from it, but I'm doing the motion anyways.
So I think some of the disconnect that I'm having, and this is on my mind because like just coming off of Resident Evil 4 remake, where the thing about the combat being a more engaging puzzle is that it doesn't like the Skyward Sword combat doesn't really feel like I'm thinking about things in terms of what the fight is. I'm just kind of playing Simon Says. Like, if the bokoblin has his sword held up horizontally, there's one correct answer on what to do. There's like, I'm not thinking about this, my surroundings and the circumstances that I'm in. And that's why I don't find this combat to be as engaging, because it's all reaction, no thought process.
I mean, there's three options for what to do, because he'll block on a certain side, not just horizontal or vertical.
Well, there's that stealth post that does have the three swords blocking.
Oh, that son of a bitch.
The bokoblin has options. I don't.
No, you do, because he doesn't just block horizontally or vertically. He blocks in four sides. And
that's,
so if
that's
he's blocking,
not a choice I'm making. That's a reaction that I'm having to what he does.
You could. Did you choose between down, up, or the other, whatever sideways direction he isn't blocking?
That's not a meaningful choice, because like in Resident Evil 4, I can have the thought of like, okay, there's these two enemies right next to each other and I don't have a ton of ammo, so let me position myself so that I can hit one of them to stagger him and then do a big kick that hits both of them instead of trying to headshot both of them and probably missing. That's what I consider to be a choice. I'm choosing to do one thing over the other instead of just having one correct option.
But there isn't one correct. I don't totally. I just don't agree with their, like, there are always multiple ways to kill the enemies, even beyond just sword fighting them.
It's not quite your immersive sim.
I don't consider swinging my sword left or swinging my sword right the same result to be a meaningful choice.
No, I mean, like, you have your bow and bombs and other items. Like, I think it's a false equivalency if you're only considering sword, whereas in the game you're comparing it to,
okay,
you're considering sword and melee attacks or gun and melee attacks.
Then what's the point of having these motion controls to flesh out the sword specifically?
Well, you also have them for the bombs and the bows and, yeah, if every item uses them.
The phrase that I used in my review was bowling for bokoblins, and that was definitely something that I did. The way that those dipshits would stare at the bomb and just be like, oh, shit. Very, very fun times.
The point is that I don't think the directional blocking adds anything that I value, is what I'm saying.
And it's fine if you don't like it.
Yeah.
Matt, what do you think about flipping over a Skulltula with your sword by swinging upwards and then doing a stab.
Oh, I don't like anything that I don't like anything that makes me tilt my head upwards. We know this.
In fairness, like anytime a game makes me duplicate a thing the character is doing, I dig that. In Metroid Prime 3, when I get to like pull the little thing out and rotate it and put it back in to open the doors, hot dang, that's immersion, baby. Like, so when Skyward Sword says, yeah, you got to flip that Skulltula up by attacking from the bottom up, I'm like, rad, that's exactly how it should be. Yeah. So I'm, no, I'm into that
bit
stuff.
I do love flipping the Skulltula and then stabbing it. Feels nice.
Yeah, I don't mean to say like there are objective judgments on the design, though. I don't think any of us can like speak objectively as to something's quality like that.
Oh, I do every day.
Okay.
No, I get what you're saying.
And I think it's something that we talked about when Skyward Sword HD released too. If I'm going back to this game, I'm going back to the Skyward Sword HD version. I'm not going back to Wii.
I wish that they should. What direction does the camera face on the Joy-Con? Does it, is it face toward you or does it face out? One of them has a camera.
Faces they could downward.
Make, yeah.
Well, if you're holding it that way, I just mean like they could make a sensor bar for my Switch.
Yeah. That if would, we have a GameCube then I adapter, would play this. Then just create a sensor bar for the Switch.
There will come a time when the Wii children are much older and they will make a Wii Mini. A Wii Mini, because they did make a Wii Mini. But it like, and there will be a Wii remote that we will be able to play our Wii Sports and our Zeldas and our Galaxy. What other games do they have that you? It was just Wii Sports. Like, what meaningfully used motion controls? Yeah.
Red Steel 2. Well,
honestly,
Red Steel 2 rocks.
Yeah. Like,
let's do a game club on that shit. Let's go.
Yeah, talk about Wii Motion Plus first person sword fighting. It's exactly what you want Skyward Sword to be.
The greatest loss of this generation is that pointer aim did not catch on.
Yes.
Yeah.
One thing that the Wii did that's just an objective improvement.
I mean, speaking of Resident Evil 4, still my favorite version of that game is the Wii version.
Yep.
I've never played that version as it happens.
I'll bet you would love it. It's really good. And like it is. It's something that I think is one of the, you know, talking about Skyward Sword as being like the sort of the death knell of motion controls as like a major player in video games. I love some of the things that have stuck on for motion controls, like when there is the ability to do any kind of like pointer aiming or more like gyro aiming. Like it's buried in menus, but playing Metroid Prime Remastered, where I can, you know, use the dual analog and also tweak my aiming by moving the controller is beautiful. And in my eyes, every shooter game should have that functionality.
Yeah, it's like a massive failing that is still not universally caught on. Like games that literally do that on Switch don't do it on other platforms.
Yeah. Yeah.
For God knows what reasons. Twin stick aiming is so bad now to me because of gyro. Yeah.
Always has been.
Like the PS5 has gyro control, like it has a gyro in the controller,
Xbox,
right?
Doesn't
Xbox is holding us all back.
Yep.
God damn it. Yeah.
Stop buying Activision and add a gyroscope to your damn controller.
I can just plug in a mouse and keyboard and play first person shooters like that. So you're like, go ahead and put the gyro controls on everything else. It's fine. If I want to get picky, I'll use a mouse and keyboard.
The only game that I know on PlayStation that supports gyro aim is Fortnite.
Good. It probably is just like the Switch code ported over.
You know what? Fortnite's a good game, Matt. You're onto something.
Mm-hmm.
Gyro aiming for the win. You know what? Let's go to while we're here, because I think there's parts of the listener mail that I think will directly funnel into what else we want to talk about.
Okay.
Let's do the first one from Cherry Goblin. Cherry Goblin writes, "Hey, Connectivity, what are your overall thoughts on Ghirahim? Is he the most expressive antagonist in the Zelda series? How do you feel about that thing he does with his tongue? Thanks."
Ghirahim rules.
I love Ghirahim.
Is some of the most wackadoo shit in a Zelda game. It's great.
I feel like he is the best antagonist in the series. Frankly, I love that. Like, not only is he just a fucking weirdo, but he also has a very active role in antagonizing Link directly, where like most of the boss fights in the game, even if Girahim isn't going to stick around, he shows up and causes the problem.
Yeah. Yep.
And that helps him feel like a very personal villain. And the way that he does have his monologues at Link, which would probably be better if Link was a character that was allowed to talk, but it does a lot to add personal stakes, where like, oh, it's not just that Girahim is like on a mission opposed to yours, he fucking hates you.
Yeah, and like personally.
Yeah, there's a line that I love where I think it's in the second or third dungeon, I don't remember which one, where like he shows up to like cause the boss fight, and he's just like, I let you live, and this is how you repay me. I guess I'm the one that learned a lesson today. And that's a fantastic moment for him.
Yeah, he's just he's weirdly well written. Like, he's better written than most characters in the Zelda franchise.
Yep. And even during the HD version, like, I wish there was a better resolution, but I also, with the overall story that they're trying to tell, I don't think you really could tell a better resolution. Because it does feel just that, like, he's a sword now.
Yeah, it's too bad that he's just the sword. Like, I'm not sure if we can bring him back.
I mean, the alternative for a character in this position is usually they just die. So yeah. I feel like Girahim being given a function like that, as being the reveal that he is like the evil counterpart to the Master Sword, is the best we could have gotten.
Yeah, I like that Skyward Sword has the plot of Soul Calibur.
I do. It's just a long game about a boy and his sword. Like, whatever metaphors you want to take with that,
that's a genre now.
Yeah, boy and his sword. I mean, it's also like I think there's a little bit like boy and his dog with the overall story of Skyward Sword, of the relationship with Link and the Master Sword throughout it.
Which one is Link?
Good point.
One of them talks and one of them doesn't. I think Link is the dog.
One of them
gives all the orders, and it's not Link.
Yeah. Sit, Link. Yep. But with Girahim, like, yeah, tremendous character. I don't think there's really a Zelda villain that really rivals Girahim. But also with this question, how do we feel about Demise? Like, the origin of Ganon and Ganondorf, so to speak. Like, is this satisfactory? Does he come in too late into the proceedings?
I'm kind of torn on him, where he does come in super late at a point where I'm already kind of done with the game. But I think that I do really like the way that he's written, mm-hmm. where he just kind of thinks it's funny that you think you're going to stand up to him.
Yeah.
And like, he's just like, you know what? I'm impressed. Meet me at the flagpole after school.
Yep.
Yeah, I love I would agree that I wish he was. I mean, technically, I guess, you know, he is the imprisoned, and so I guess he shows up earlier, but I would have liked to have him
that
be
was
more...
his larval form. It doesn't count.
Yeah. I agree that I would have liked to have him be more present throughout the game, but
I don't totally remember like Demise even necessarily being talked about up to that point.
I mean, he's mentioned in the intro, but not like,
yeah, it's just
I don't even
like
know
the
if
evil.
They say his name. Like they definitely they show a creature that is intended to be Demise.
Yeah.
But it's not spelled out.
We don't really have his motivations, do we? Like,
he's just a big evil demon guy.
I think he's the devil. He's Satan. He is the opposite of Hylia. He is just the bad of that.
Yeah.
And I would have liked that a lot more if we got more of a sense of like what his conflict against Hylia was, because that is very clearly a thing in the story and like the background of the game, but I don't think we really get enough of a sense of what it meant.
I guess I saw him more as like sort of this primordial thing. Like, it's not that he has something against Hylia. I saw it more as just he is just evil incarnate, and so he acts in an evil way, and there's nothing like of all of the versions of him when you get to like Ganon and Ganondorf, like we talked about this in like both Twilight Princess and Wind Waker, but like Ganondorf is a human who has the capacity to be good, but lets Demise take over. Demise is just the part that takes over. He's just the evil part.
To that end, I don't think I like Demise being like the curse that causes Ganondorf.
Oh, I love that.
I think it removes a lot of agency from Ganondorf.
I don't think it does, because I think that, and I think Wind Waker sort of does a good job of keeping Ganondorf a human. Like, I think there's a reality in which Ganondorf cannot succumb to Demise, right? Like, I think there's this parallel of like there is the capacity for evil in all of us, and Ganondorf only becomes Ganon when he lets that happen.
I think I just prefer the interpretation where like Ganondorf is just literally too angry to die, because as it is now, it feels like he's resurrected because he's supposed to.
I guess I would argue that Ganondorf, by the time Ganondorf is too angry to die, that's Ganon. You know, like not literally, because he doesn't look like a pig, but like in the context of that transition point from a man to this demon creature, like he is escaping from the Sacred Realm and all that stuff, like the human is gone. And that's why it's cool at the end of Wind Waker, we get that little glimpse back into the human.
I think that transformation into Ganon is less interesting when it's just part of the curse.
I get what you mean. I think I don't see that transformation as inevitable. And I think that's what makes it more interesting. But I do love, like, yeah, I remember playing this, you know, when it came out and getting to that Demise moment, and like, you know, this game being the origin point, and defeating Demise and having him say that line of just like, all those who share the blood of the goddess and the spirit of the hero are eternally bound to this curse of the incarnation of his hatred. Like, it's so.
It's metal.
It's just awesome. And it's a very, once again, like primordial, like Skyward Sword feels like this battle between gods that then ripples out into sort of this more mortal world going forward, because Skyward Sword is very much this, you know, metaphors for heaven and then like the earthly realm and all this stuff going on. And so it feels like it's dealing with this grander thing. That just has consequences on everything going forward.
Yeah, I think now that I think about it more, something that I would have liked would be for us to like actually see Hylia. Like, yeah, Zelda is a reincarnation of Hylia, but I think if there was a figure in the story that we met that was truly like the equal counterpart to Demise, that would have made it feel a bit more connected rather than him just kind of showing up.
Even if Zelda was involved in that final battle.
Well, that's just a problem with this entire franchise at this point. Tears of the Kingdom is going to hurt me so much.
You know, they did it well in Twilight Princess and in Wind Waker of Zelda actually like take even Ocarina of Time, like she shoots an arrow or something. Yeah, or she like kind of shoots the wavy beams. But Zelda is absent from this boss fight. She is not on the scene at all. And I do think it would have, if you had the weight of all, I guess technically when he utters the line, I'm pretty sure all three of them are there, but if you had the weight of all three of them fighting in this weird space water realm, like holy crap, the environment you're fighting in is just so cool.
I need, from this whole franchise, I need Zelda to be more active. It's the one thing I need more
her
than
name's
anything.
In the freaking title. Let's go.
Skyward Sword's like a pretty good example of that. She's just not in the final battle, but she's not trapped.
She is eventually
for half of the game.
This is one of the best Zeldas in the franchise.
Oh, it's she's just, a character. Yes.
It's so frustrating that she doesn't get to be there in that final moment.
Yeah. And she also basically disappears for half of the game.
Yeah,
because she's trapped.
But, you know, the initial half.
Yeah. And she's also disappeared there, but she's doing stuff.
I will say, after I finish this game and you have like you find out that Zelda's like behind that door trapped in the crystal thingy, I remember restarting the game and getting to that point and going up to that door, and you can like they give you just enough crack to peer through and see that from the beginning of the game, she's been back there. And that's such a nice little touch that they put in there. like almost for the express purpose of like, people are going to go back, and wouldn't it be cool if you could already see Zelda in there?
I think that's the entire reason that the door is cracked open.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. And it's such a nice touch.
What I like about Demise's Curse is that it weaves the other games into a grander epic of a struggle between all these different forces, rather than just, because from a meta sense, it's just like, it's the designers reusing tropes and reusing characters because they're recognizable and they're cool. But this brings it all together into almost like Arthurian legends, where it's it can be a twist on similar tales with similar characters, and some things are different and we don't know how much of it is true, but they're all part of the same tapestry.
Exactly.
I kind of agree with everybody in a way, even if that's not possible, because there are parts of Demise that I think are really cool. There are parts of it that I think it's lacking. I think Matt, you hit the nail on the head that Hylia not having a real personification like is the missing piece of some of this origination story, where yes, you know, Zelda is the incarnation of Hylia and everything, but it doesn't give you that background. Like there's probably another version of this story in one of our Fortnite multiverses or whatever, where
fan fiction is really good for.
Yes. halfway through the game, Demise reveals themselves, and that's also when we get some of the goddess showing up as well, even if it's a flashback or something. But then if, you know, you lose some, you win some, and that if that were to happen halfway through the game, then we probably would get less Girahim.
Was Hylia in the manga from Hyrule Historia? Because there's like a canon manga. Is. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Forget what she does in that.
She sends everybody to the sky and then like hangs out with Proto Link while he dies.
Jobs, basically.
It's debatably canon. It's in the Hyrule Historia, so like I kind of feel like that counts, but it's none of the other manga is canon.
It is weird that there's a Link before our Link in Skyward Sword.
There's always a bigger Link.
Yeah, there's always a lighthouse, always whatever.
Yep.
So Lemonade writes, it's a long one. Sit down, fellas. I have some thoughts on Skyward Sword. I have never finished the game. I bought it at launch and had a good first impression, but I soon realized that this isn't what I wanted from Zelda. Skyward Sword is oops all dungeon. I vaguely remember marketing from the time saying they wanted to blur the lines between the overworld and the dungeons. They certainly achieved this. The overworld is a maze to navigate. There is no feeling of openness. You do all this stuff just to get to the dungeon, and then you do it even more intensely in the dungeon. I'm a fan of Bethesda RPGs, and around this time I was already hoping for an open world Zelda. Played it for a while, but eventually lost interest in the game around the end of the dungeon in the desert. Which one? Skip forward to December 2016. I decide to try replaying Skyward Sword. Things go okay for a while, but I only make slightly more progress than my original playthrough. I got too frustrated in the desert lake area and quit the game again. One complaint I don't have is with the motion controls. Unlike the Waggle and Twilight Princess on Wii, the Wii Motion Plus works amazingly well with Skyward Sword. The game is designed around it very well. Skip forward again to the HD version on Switch. When it was first announced, I said I wasn't going to buy it because I don't like the game. Then comes launch day and I decide to buy it anyway just to see how the new button controls feel. I played it on stream up to the end of the first dungeon. I was surprised how well they adapted the motion controls to the right stick. The ability to control the camera with the right stick also makes the game so much better to play and just navigate the world. All the other little refinements they made to the game also help make the game much more playable. I don't see a reason why anyone would ever need to go back to the Wii version now. I haven't played it again since I streamed it that one time on launch day, but maybe one day I will try it again. P.S. I hated the Silent Realm.
To address that,
yo, the Silent Realm is a saint. You take that back.
Well, you lost me so hard there.
I feel we should apologize immediately to Lemonade, given that you've never finished the game. Sorry for spoiling all that Demise stuff. Just forget we said any of that.
look, you've had time, okay?
Yeah.
We can spoil the Wii version, but the HD version is still under the statute of limitations. Yeah,
the so. Secret ending.
As far as you know, the HD version has a totally different ending.
I think this email hits on what I found to be one of the more interesting things to think about in Skyward Sword for this playthrough for me, where it's kind of the bizarro universe counterpart to Breath of the Wild.
Yep. They went so hard in one direction and were like, oh shit, and then went the other way.
Yeah, and then many of the things that I don't like about Breath of the Wild, Skyward Sword, I think succeeded at. Yep. Like, they are directly opposite games in many ways.
They're opposite, and yet the thing I noticed going back for Skyward Sword HD is how many things in Breath of the Wild came from Skyward Sword. Like they're opposite, and yet they share, like, you know, the stamina meter and, to some extent, the glider. And, like, there are certain things that carried over, which is interesting.
They're very similar in specifics, but once we start talking about broad strokes and structure, then they become total opposites because Skyward Sword is oops all dungeons and Breath of the Wild is oops no dungeons. And I don't really think Breath of the Wild succeeds at having a meaningful combat experience in many ways, but I think that even if I don't like the combat experience in Skyward Sword, there is still a noticeable rhythm to the combat loop. So, they swung very, like, totally to the other direction for Breath of the Wild. And it's very easy for me to see why people don't like the game in a replay. I think that there's a lot of vitriol that it absolutely doesn't deserve. Like, people gleefully hate this game as though it was Other M. It's nowhere near Other M. But the game definitely does lack what I think is fair to say is a core appeal of the franchise, where it doesn't have an appealing world to explore that easily leads into side content, because the structure of Skyward Sword is also, you've got a very urgent story that's taking you from place to place to place. There's never a moment where it just feels natural to stumble across something. The only time that you ever go into side content is when you make an active choice to ignore the story to do side content instead. And so that, I think that it's very easy to look at that and say, oh yeah, this is why this game doesn't appeal to people, because it's kind of opposite what you said about Wind Waker, Neil, where it's like Wind Waker is all vibes. Skyward Sword doesn't have time for vibes.
Yeah. I agree with that. And that, like, I kind of like the oops all dungeons feel, but it does. There's a little bit of there's not as much of a full world there. And I don't know. I don't know, because I feel like I've been satisfied in that regards with Zelda games past and future, with Skyward Sword, that I don't think it really bugs me as much in this game, but it might hold it back from being like an all-timer for me. Just because when I think about this game, I do think about some of those really wonderful moments in, Lanayru, just all of the Silent Realm bits. Like, the way these worlds are interconnected, well, not between each other, but the different dungeons that you go down, they're all interconnected. But I have a failing of remembering a lot of specific characters in a way that, like, I feel like Wind Waker stands out, Majora's Mask absurdly stands out, whereas Skyward Sword is just kind of like, okay, like, what is the solution here? And they're very good puzzles, extremely good dungeons across the board. But there is a missing part of it that I think in a perfect world, maybe the sky solves that problem, but the sky just kind of sucks.
Yeah. And I think the fact that, like, the sky, I'm not going to say the sky is good. I don't think the sky is good, but the sky also, I never really explored it because there was never a point in the story where it felt natural to explore it.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
And I think that also really hurts the vibe, because I remember thinking, like, in Twilight Princess, like, whenever I went out into the Hyrule Field, even though that Hyrule Field was barren, it was still a time to sort of, like, sit back and reflect. And every now and then I would see something off to the side and get interested in that while on my way. And I never had that experience in Skyward Sword, because it was always very clear where I needed to go. And once I got there, there was a puzzle to solve. And I also liked that. I like oops all dungeons, but there is definitely something here that feels missing. And that I think that's why I look at a lot of people that say that they don't like Skyward Sword, and I like, fair. I get it.
It's like how I understand. I can understand why Berube hates Breath of the Wild. Like mm-hmm. it's in that same regard. Like that's I kind of see that. Like if it's not the brand of Zelda that you prefer, then you're not going to have a good time.
Yeah, but there is also like the game gets like some. It's like I said, there's vitriol about this game that I don't understand because like I totally get saying this game just doesn't have what I'm looking for. But then you get people that are being like, this game fucking sucks. I can't believe that they released something like this. There's just nothing good about it. Like that's where I'm like, you're clearly wrong.
Matt, just picture it. Like, imagine if you reviewed Fire Emblem Engage and loved it. Imagine if you were like, you played it before release, you know, man, I can't wait to talk to people about this game. And it comes out, and in the ensuing weeks, pretty much everyone around you is just like, fuck this.
I got a miniature version of that because it, like I said in my review of Engage, like, yeah, this cast really good. Loved all the support conversations. And then I learned from like all of my friends playing the game. Apparently, I just so happened to not get the bad supports from the bad characters. Like every time someone described a support conversation to me, I was like, yeah, that sounds terrible. I didn't use that character, though. So it was like literally that no fears, one fear image where it's like, yeah. what if you only use the few good characters? What if every character you didn't use is fucking garbage? It turns out that's what Engage was.
That sounds like a skill issue on their part. They just chose the wrong characters.
But it is. But I mean, like, it's Skyward Sword in a way, like back in 2011 was the realization that a lot of the friends that I had in, like, you know, dating back high school, college, that like, okay, so I'm gonna be on this video game things a lot longer than you guys are, because either I had friends that are like, I'm not playing that motion control bullshit, or they like got a couple dungeons. I two friends, I don't think they listen, there's a chance they might, so if you know who you are, two friends that both got to the Ancient Cistern, beat that boss, and were like, yeah, I'm done. I'm like, what?
How?
Like, okay. Yeah, I got to the dungeon with the thing with a bunch of arms, and I'm like, yes, and then you continue to play the game, right? No.
Okay, I like, need to make a confession here. Ancient Cistern, yes, one of the best dungeons in the franchise. Kalaktos, super overrated. I don't like Kalaktos.
No, Kalaktos is great.
I do think, I mean, in the grand scheme of Zelda bosses, I don't think Kalaktos would be like Ancient Cistern, you know, top two, not two, dungeon wise, but Kalaktos might, you know, might slip back into like bottom half of the top 10.
There's just nothing for me there in that fight, because like,
but even still, like multiple people that got to the Ancient Cistern and just noped out of the game after that. Like, it was, and this was, you know, there's, you could probably go back, listen to Connectivity in 2011, because I think there might have been like 2 months after that game came out where it's just like Zach being like, this is dumb. And I'm like, oh, why? like, and, you know, I did know people that enjoyed the game back then, but it was just across the entire Nintendo community and the greater video game community. Like, people just dunked on this game, and it is, you know, probably hardened me up into the cynical son of a bitch that I am now when it comes to video games and discourse. But
I blame Ego Raptor.
Probably
his stupid video.
There's a lot of good points in that video, but I agree. His Skyward Sword takes are, of course, objectively wrong. I just did the thing. But there's some good points in that video. The problem is he makes them about Ocarina of Time when they should be about Link to the Past.
And he's specifically saying using Link to the Past as like, yeah, here's
that's
the good,
that's
one.
The part that bothered me is I'm like, no, Ocarina of Time is just Link to the Past. All of your points are valid, but they're about Link to the Past.
It's like how Metroid Prime is just Super Metroid in 3D. It's still great. Both games still rule. It's fine.
Only Metroid Prime explains the controls to you.
Yeah.
Metroid Prime's not as good. You have to look up.
But yeah, I mean, like, Skyward Sword gets too much shit. I think all four people on the panel can agree to that.
Absolutely. You know,
I know there are people who, if you played it and legitimately bounced off of it, then your opinion is valid and I validate you, but it's one of those games that 90% of the people who go, oh yeah, that game's terrible, when I go, oh, did you play it, they go, no. Yeah. Okay, cool. You downloaded an opinion off the internet. Well done. Like,
yeah.
And that's most of Skyward Sword is truly the devil's third of The Legend of Zelda. Nobody's actually played it. They all just heard it was bad.
And what's wild is that wasn't there like a, was it a GameStop or IGN or a GameSpot that gave it a 7, and then that poor reviewer had so much ridicule thrown at them.
I remember the daring. IGN review was extremely positive, so it was probably GameSpot.
Yeah. Well, I remember IGN famously gave the horrifically negative review to Twilight Princess that dared to give it an 8.8.
I should go back and read that review. It's probably pretty accurate.
Well, that was like, that's like the joke where it's like 8.8 is pretty positive overall, but they got so much backlash for that because they ruined the Metacritic.
Yeah.
Yep.
The history of video games critique is littered with crap like that. Is there anything else? So dungeons, I guess we kind of talked about that. We haven't mentioned the sand thing. Ship.
Well, one specific thing that I noticed about a lot of the dungeons is that there is an amount of less is more that I wasn't expecting to them, where it's like, if you look at the dungeon maps, they're actually pretty small. They're just really, really dense.
Yeah. And it's also, I mean, it's because the build up to the dungeon is part of the dungeon. Like, that's why, like, that is part. I noticed that a lot playing it in the HD version the other year, is that, the dungeons don't feel as long as the actual dungeons. But that's because the whole experience is the dungeon.
If you realize you've even entered a dungeon.
Yeah.
But like in specifically the Ancient Cistern, something that I noticed there was that, like, there's like four rooms total, but that main room has like six different sections that you're doing at totally different times.
This
game is exceptionally good at making the dungeons be these interconnected spaces where you're looping back and forth between big areas, and that's awesome.
You know what makes me mad about that, like, where well, I guess the overworld in Breath of the Wild is kind of that, but like, where was that in the Divine Beasts? Damn it. Like,
sometimes you walk back through the middle to get to the other wing.
You know, I did the entirety of the burrito Divine Beast without ever having to tilt it but once.
Was that like an intentional thing?
Just to see if you could do it? No. I realized that the only way to get back was to actually like use the Divine Beast's core feature of rotating it a little bit, and I had to do it only at the very end. Good game.
Well, we'll talk about the next time. Divine Beast, maybe a low point of that incredible video game. The sand ship, and just Lenayru in general. I still think that the time stone stuff is incredible. Looked great on Wii, looks great on Switch. I do think that like the sand sea and the sand ship, while very impactful moments my first time through, that is something that playing it in the HD version, I was kind of like, oh, like that's kind of what this is. The dungeon itself for the sand ship is okay, but like the impact of that is realizing that it's a dungeon as opposed to just getting there and doing it.
Yeah. I will say, on the topic of I just turned 30 and am terrified of time, boy, Sandship is a lot to take in. Like, everything about Lenayru province. When the guy's like, yeah, just go to my house, pick up this map. There's his dead family.
That's right.
It's a lot. Yep. It's a lot. And here's the dragon of this area. He died. He died of illness years ago.
Yeah, I can get it. I'm glad I played that at 33 and not 35. It probably would have messed me up.
Did not like feeling that. Fantastic area of the game. Made me miserable.
I also played this at the age of 30 last year. But luckily I was too distracted reading all of the Hylian texts throughout Lenayru, which is all unique and all says things that are relevant to where it is. This is the anti-Skyward or the anti-Twilight Princess when it comes to its random text on things.
That
it
is
all
impressive.
Means things.
Yeah. I mean, this is, they had to make the Hyrule Historia. So they're like, oh, we actually need to formalize a ship.
They can all read it. No, it's great because like now inside of like the Lineru mining thing, above every gate, it says the word gate. Like, good job, Zelda team. You
technological advancement.
Yeah.
Any other dungeons that people want to call out? I know you guys hated the sliding puzzle. Actually, I mean, I also think it's a good culmination of.
I think it's objectively a good dungeon. I just
you just reject the notion of its
sliding
existence.
Puzzles. I think it's fair to use the term racist against sliding puzzles.
Noted video game racist, Matt Zawadniak.
Yeah. I mean, in H-Bomber Guys, Tommy Tallarico video, I am credited in the Patreon credits as a gaming racist.
There you go. It's canon.
I do. It makes me think of the Austin Powers Gold Member line of I only hate two things, people that are intolerant of the people's culture and the Dutch. but I mean, like, there's I would say, like, in general, just all the dungeons in this game are pretty good. I think Cistern, Sandship, the final, was that, I think, the sky dungeon, Sky Palace, I forget what the name of the last dungeon is,
Skyview Temple. Yep.
They are all very good. The one thing that I do want to drag in this game, and Matt, you lived it very recently, the last third is some padding.
Oh my god, I'm glad that earlier Alex said, like, yeah, the game is just feeling too long. Like, legit, cut that last third. Don't even replace it. Just cut it.
Yeah,
you have a better game.
Streamline, like, have your peak moment be doing, like, the Silent Realm on Skyloft, and then, like, start going finale, as opposed to then, like, continuing for another 10 hours or whatever.
Or at the very least, like, change up the biomes. Because it's just the same three areas over and
they
over.
They made
again.
One of them underwater. What do you want, Alex?
Change up the biomes, but not like that.
I do. I mean, I think what they do with layering on top of those areas, they're very successful with. But it is like by the end of the game, they're kind of testing the patience of like, how cool is this? Like, what if we did it again? And you're like, okay.
You do one lap too many.
Yeah.
Because
I agreed.
One of my friends, I was talking to my friends as I was playing the game, and one of them said that, like, the he remembered a tweet from back in the day that he saw where it's just like, I'm terrified to play more Skyward Sword because when I get back to it, it might tell me to do three more things again.
Yeah, I also do think that the fatiguing of, like, the lack of a real overworld to explore and having to just do thing after thing after thing. Like, Skyward Sword was only done, I did it in 30-some hours, and Breath of the Wild, I could easily put 100 hours into. And the difference
I think
the
you did
time
Skyward
spent.
Sword pretty quickly. I mean, I actually, keep
well,
talking.
My second
I'm,
play.
I'm already looking it up.
I think it's like 38, it was probably closer to 40-ish.
Do I need to check what my final play time was?
Oh, so, okay. Focusing on main objectives, 38 hours.
Yeah. Okay, I'll grab my Switch.
Is honestly, like, the average Zelda game is what, 30?
Well, that's what I'm getting at, is that it's less the actual time. It's the fact that there's very little breathing room, and the lack of variety in the biomes just starts to wear on you after a while.
Yeah. Well, I think, and Alex, correct me if I'm wrong, I think what you're saying is that it's a long game, but it's not, like, it's like empty calories for some of those hours.
I think I'm almost saying the opposite, where it's like it's there's
or too,
there's
too
so
jam-packed.
Much. Yeah, it is too dense for so long without that moment to breathe, which was what Matt was talking about earlier. And
it
so
it feels exhausting.
Yeah,
because you have to be in puzzle brain mode the entire time.
It is like point to point to point to point to point, or like you're flying.
I had to take more breaks during this game than any other Zelda game.
Now, I remember, I think my initial playthrough was like 40, 45 hours, and I forget what my Switch playthrough was, but I thought it was, I think it was around 40 again.
I just checked my final Switch playtime, 24:11.
Damn.
That's really fast, actually.
Yeah.
I did, like,
that's some
no
Surrend
side
time.
Content.
Yeah.
I did side content at all. Because, again, like, the game's structure was just, like, story.
Yeah.
No time to breathe.
Okay, so my Switch actually says played for 40 hours or more.
Okay. But so that's you played it like recently. So
I did play a little bit. Actually, yeah, I replayed some parts.
Yeah. So this week. High 30s. Yeah, I have a feeling. I mean, this is maybe starting to wrap a little bit in the direction of closing. It took me 10 years to replay Skyward Sword. Played it on Wii and then went back to it and replayed it on Switch. I have a feeling it's going to be less time before I replay it again, especially after messing around with it for the purposes of kind of just refreshing my mind before this podcast. I really enjoy this game. I think it's the kind of thing, if I do go to replay it, I'm probably not going to play through all of it. Probably going to do a little bit.
Sure.
Maybe then come back like a year later and be like, oh, I'll do a couple more things.
That's the nice thing about just having a save file. You just pick up wherever you left off. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And like it is because, you know, that last third specifically is slog like. And it's not even, I don't even think I'd say it's bad. It just, it's intense. There's too much of it.
There's so little runtime after it too that like on a replay I'm almost like just stop there.
yeah and it is like I really, you chop five, you know, thinking about this game as a 30-35 hour game for like an average playthrough, like chop five to 10 hours off of that game and this is probably a much more stronger, polished experience. But it was, I mean, that is the era, and it is what we're dealing with games where people are like, oh, there's 50 hours of gameplay in this. Like, that's needs to be on the back of the box and part of the pull quotes and blah, blah, blah. That's how we got into this position, people.
It's a backwards Twilight Princess, where it has a pretty much the same amount of bad as Twilight Princess does at the beginning. It just has at the end. I think I'd take the end of Skyward Sword over the beginning of Twilight Princess.
Yeah. Skyward Sword also has a bit of a rough beginning, I would say.
I think in the Switch version, it is, because, and that actually segues to another thing that's on our list here. I did drag that there aren't memorable like characters when you're exploring, you know, Eldin, Pharaon, and Lanayru. I do think the cast on Skyloft is really fun. Like, Groose is awesome.
Groose is great.
That freaky little bat thing that like is scaring kids.
Batro. Like,
yeah. I do love a lot of what's going on in Skyloft, and because of that, I didn't expect to like the introduction in HD as much as I did when I replayed it. Because I do like that character. I do like those characters. I do like that world. It probably does go on for a little bit too long. But especially with a character like Groose, the way that they, you know, give more personality to Zelda, like it all kind of worked for me. And I wish that there was more reason to kind of do stuff with those characters throughout the game.
Yeah, I also think one way, and I think they did make legitimate changes to the intro to speed it up a little bit. But one of the big things that they didn't mention is that the loading time, so it didn't occur to me until I was doing like comparison stuff at launch, but just going in and out of the Knight Academy on Wii, it's like a 30 to 40 second load. On Switch, it's pretty much instantaneous.
Jesus.
And I think that makes it feel a lot faster. Yeah. I had no memory of that, and then I did it, and I was like, that's what it was like to go into buildings? Like, yeah, okay, that adds some time over the course of the game. But yeah, it's pretty much just instant on Switch.
Yeah, and I think we can, you know, fault the decision to do motion controls in the first place. Maybe the game didn't need it. But I think you also kind of had to do the more labored opening, because it is being like, okay, people, Wii Motion Plus, let's review what this is before we throw you out of the wolves.
It's also a Wii game where they're like trying to explain Zelda to your grandma.
Yeah.
Like,
it's of the era, of its time.
Yep.
It's the 25th anniversary of the Knights Academy, which feels shockingly too short.
Yeah. Don't worry too much about that.
How long ago
did Demise destroy the world?
I'm
evidently
really,
like last week.
Like everybody remembers.
I'm really annoyed that they didn't update it to be the 35th anniversary when it came out on Switch.
Just retconned it for the meme.
Yeah, it's not like it made sense anyway. Might as well. Though that would have huge implications on the timeline.
when the Skyward Sword HD
would be in a different 10 years. Timeline. Yeah.
Yeah. Anything else about the characters?
Groose really is that good.
Yeah. Bring Groose back.
It's weird that, like, I don't think he's popular in Japan. Like, I think that's what I've read.
I think that's probably part of the problem.
Which, I mean, that much is evident from he's not in Hyrule Warriors, so.
Yeah, he has not shown up in anything since
game. Wait, Agatha got in before Groose?
This Japanese is people like bug girls.
How many iconic characters are there in Twilight Princess?
Sexy Tingle. Ooh,
Sexy Tingle, yeah.
He's already in the game.
Not Furlough.
Are you telling me that the Tingle that's already in Hyrule Warriors isn't good enough for you?
I mean, he's also sexy. It's just that there's a specific one.
He could be sexier. I'm trying to think. Impa. I really like Impa.
Impa's in Hyrule Warriors.
Yeah.
This is Impa, really good.
Skyward Sword is good. Yep. It really is setting the groundwork for a lot of what I feel like they succeeded at with doing some characters in Breath of the Wild.
This is also kind of like the template for like how people prefer Impa now too. Like, people don't like old lady Impa anymore. They like young warrior Impa.
Young sexy Impa.
Yeah. Even though technically she was a younger warrior type in Ocarina of Time, but like, she's an actual character in this. So,
should we talk about Fee?
It sucks because I think I like the character overall, but damn, is Fee annoying.
She's kind of like a nothing character to me at best. I know that the whole robot shtick doesn't do it for me, where like her whole character is just like these cold statistical observations, which is usually stating the obvious, and like numerical statistics out of nowhere is like just always, I never enjoy that in writing. Yep. And that's kind of all her character is. So like the swerve at the end of the game where I'm supposed to care about her just does not land for me.
Yeah, I get that.
Like, thinking about like the personality of the Master Sword, I wouldn't think like more boring C-3PO to be the archetype to pull from.
Mm-hmm.
But she has such a good theme, though.
It is very good music.
Fee's lament is incredible.
Yeah, Fee's music is great and like weirdly haunting. Like, they play it a lot of different ways throughout the game, that very effective.
The dancing's weird, music good.
Yeah, but the thing, and it's related to Fee's sound design, but the thing that honestly made Fee work better for me, like I at the end of Skyward Sword, when Fee had to leave, I was pretty torn up, even though I found her annoying throughout the entire game. Like, I guess
girl and her dog. It's very sad when the girl has to go to college of becoming a sword.
This is going to be a reference that not everyone will get, but when they rebooted Doctor Who, and they had his first companion in the reboot was Rose, and then they had David Tennant eventually play the Doctor. And when they got rid of Rose, I never liked that companion character, but like the character of the Doctor did. And so I was invested in that, even though I didn't actually like the character. And that's pretty much what Fee was at the end of this. Like, it mattered to Link, and I cared about my boy Link. And so that's what mattered.
Honestly, I'm not even a big Who fan, but like, I got it.
Yeah. But the thing that made Fee work better than any of that is in Breath of the Wild, when we see in a flashback that Zelda goes to the forest, to the Deku Tree, and picks up the sword, and you hear the little Fee chime. And I think she says something about hearing a voice, and it's like, oh my God, she's still there. Like that. Oh man, that lands
all these years.
So good. Yeah. Cause you're on the opposite end of the timeline. It's been like millions of years, and it's like the only character in the series that's legitimately because Link and Zelda and Ganon and all that, like, they're, you know, they're new versions of this character, but like, Fee's still there. It's
the
R2-D2. Yes,
of the Zelda
universe.
She's been
there the whole time. No, and yes,
we already said she's the C-3PO.
That works too.
She's both of them combined.
It's retcon, and that's, I get that, but like that premise of just throughout all of it, like she's always been there, is, I think, really impactful.
With what they're doing with Tears of the Kingdom, it probably will be something a little bit more, you know, understated like they did in Breath of the Wild. Wouldn't be surprised if we get some more kind of fee flourishes in Tears of the Kingdom, since it is so much about repairing the Master Sword.
If he's dead.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Either that or the beginning of the game will be like, we killed Fi. Mm-hmm. 100% chance that bitch is dead.
No.
Alex, you kind of brought up an interesting point that this is the last 3D Zelda of its kind. Like, do you guys think we'll ever go back to a 3D Zelda game in this style ever again?
At this point, I'm wondering if we're ever going to get a 2D Zelda in this style again.
It's been 10 years. Like, or at least since one, and that's debatable. It's debatable if A Link Between Worlds is a brand new Zelda game.
I kind of only give it partial credit for being one. So
yeah, like if we extend it past what is it? Fucking Spirit Tracks?
Like, I think so.
Well, Triforce Heroes. Does Four Swords count? If Four Swords counts, then Triforce Heroes has to count.
I mean, that's where I'd say like that's not. That's not a 2D Zelda game in this style.
Oh, that's fair. Yeah, okay. That's I can get behind that exact wording.
I mean, yeah, really, if you do extend it out, like since a 100% brand new Skyward Sword was the last one.
Mm-hmm.
It's 2011.
They would have to create three branches of the Zelda team in order to make space for it. And I'm not sure if there's a market for it anymore.
I mean, it's almost like maybe the hope is that you do have that main Zelda team working on, you know, Breath of the Wild line games. And if they, I mean, in an alternate universe, maybe Grezzo or Tantalus has the where, like, I mean, I think Grezzo's, I'm very baffled that Grezzo has not made like more 2D Zelda games. They did the Link's Awakening remake. They helped out with a bunch of stuff on the 3DS, co-developed Triforce Heroes.
I also wouldn't mind Capcom getting to do one again.
I was going to say that, like, the idea of someone outside, maybe not Capcom, but like the idea of somebody outside the Nintendo team doing one has resulted in the best 2D Zelda game ever made.
So here's the thing about Capcom. If you want that team that made, you know, Minish Cap to make Zelda games,
they're working on Breath of the Wild now.
The director of those games is the director of Breath of the Wild.
Right.
Which feels weird to think about, because it feels like two different teams making two different games, but it's the same director and producer for both Skyward Sword and Breath of the Wild.
That's why Vadi's coming back.
I guess it's more like they should really leverage letting other companies play with this franchise.
Yeah, especially now that like they kind of have moved at like the money's in Breath of the Wild. You know, let companies play more in this pattern, this space beyond just remakes, because we have had Tantalus, you know, took on Twilight Princess and Skyward Sword. Grezzo's worked on the 3DS, you know, Ocarina, Majora's, Link's Awakening on Switch. Like, really, like Grezzo make a new 2D or 3D Zelda game or something.
There is a third party studio that has a lot of experience in making brand new 3D Zelda likes.
If they get, you know, what is it, Gunfire and Airship Syndicate dream.
You know what's great? Airship Syndicate can do the 2D ones and Gunfire Games can do the 3D ones.
Yep.
They're like these two studios that randomly have a ton of and not making remakes, but making original 3D Zelda likes. Like, do it. Make it happen.
Mercury Steam make it?
No, keep them on Metroid. Keep them on Metroid. No.
Like, they could make it, yes, but yeah, you'd be pulling them away from something.
Yeah, Metroid Dread was too good. We already tried this with Retro. I know the Donkey Kong games are very good, but like it has been 16 years since Prime 3, guys. If we actually want to see another 2D Metroid game, let Mercury Steam stay on that until they die.
I do think a remake of Ocarina of Time is just a matter of time. It will happen eventually. Final Fantasy VII
remake shit. Let's go. I want like timey-wimey bullshit. Like it's actually a sequel. Well, let's go. Ocarina of Time, Final Fantasy VII remake style. I want it so bad.
Honestly, fresh off of Resident Evil 4 remake, maybe Sacred Cows can get remakes. Like,
yeah.
Like that, I'm convinced now. Take my favorite game that I'm afraid you'll fuck up and just like go for it.
Because well, I feel like there's a short list of companies that I would trust with that. It's basically Capcom and Nintendo.
Yeah, let Capcom make Zelda.
Not Square Enix, the company that made the game you're comparing your Ocarina of Time remake to.
Square Enix made Nier, which is basically a satire of Zelda. So,
you know what? Yeah. Well, it's just Square Enix is just chaos. Like, let's get real. Like they are the villain from fucking Stranger of Paradise. Like that, they go out and they're just like, guess what? We're releasing 47 games in the next 2 weeks. And you're like, what the fuck? Why?
Square Enix is two creative teams that know what they're doing and a group of other executives desperately trying to win political power from them.
And somehow, like Kawazu is just there being like, I get to make and remake Saga games forever. Because they don't lose enough money for anyone to notice.
What I'm hearing is that Link might be able to listen to a Zune in an upcoming game.
yeah.
Is there something I'm missing here?
A Stranger in Paradise.
Yeah.
Oh, for fuck.
Yeah, that was a feature.
I don't think Anuma has the Nomura-like insanity to do an Ocarina of Time Final Fantasy VII remake.
So
It is a drum I will keep beating, but I do think that like at a certain point Nintendo's gonna touch the sacred cow and remake Ocarina of Time.
I'm hearing that Yoko Taro is the choice.
Yes.
Yeah.
Actually,
Yoko Taro's Ocarina of Time. Yes.
At the end of the day, though, there's one path forward for Zelda, and that is Goron Gagotoku.
I mean, I need Captain Falcon doing that shit first, but I'll settle for Gorons if that's what it's going to take.
I wonder if we'll get a new Hyrule Warriors for Tears of the Kingdom.
I'd imagine so.
And is it a sequel to Age of Calamity, or is it an alternate reality of Tears of the Kingdom, or is it both?
Unironically, those are games I hope they never stop making. Like Musou alternate universe sequels.
Once again, that's probably how you get your weird Ocarina of Time remake is in the form of a Warriors game.
If we branch out and count Persona 5 Strikers, because it's basically the same thing,
for
a different company, they're 3 for 3. Like those are all incredible games.
I can't wait to have a system that can run Age of Calamity.
And really, like, I mean, Age of Calamity and Three Hopes are just—they rock. They're fun.
Yeah.
Like you can poke holes in some of the nitty-gritty details and everything, but just on a like moment to moment, like I'm taking these characters that I have some affinity for and just kicking the shit out of things. Great times.
I feel like. I'm not even trying to make a snide joke when I say this. We need more games that are willing to have dumb fan fiction energy.
Yes.
Like just give me spin-off games. Like you can make them all Musou games if you want. I love Musou games, but give me spin-offs that are fan fiction. Unironically want those.
That's the great thing about Devil's Third is that that's just the base game.
Like Devil's Third is fan fiction for a franchise that doesn't exist.
That's exactly what it is. It's a parody of nothing, and it's incredible. It's so good.
It's like how Sin and Punishment feels like a sequel to a game that doesn't exist.
Maybe it might feel like a sequel if I knew what the plot of that game was.
I mean, that's the problem, John.
Is Devil's Third fan fiction for Sin and Punishment?
Is Devil's Third the prequel to Sin and Punishment?
I will say I know what the plot of Devil's Third, like I can follow the dumb plot of Devil's Third. Sin and Punishment is just people show up and like say vaguely audible words. And then you fly around and shoot things.
So here, it's part of Treasure's Interconnected Universe. You need to get to the post credits of Dynamite Heady, beat Gunstar Heroes, and then get to the end of Ronald McDonald in McDonald Land on Sega Genesis to be able to understand what happens in Sin and Punishment.
That makes sense.
Everyone, when we did a bonus episode on Smasher Pieces for Sin and Punishment, we were like describing the plot, and I just said, Achi is there. If you're wondering who Achi is, so am I.
Yeah, I'm impressed you knew a character's name.
Maybe we don't get 3D traditional Zelda games. Maybe we get like traditional 3D Tingle games. Because that franchise exists.
I'm listening.
I think we're losing the plot a bit here.
I just had the thought that, can you imagine Justin Brube and his life if Zelda just becomes the only two things are Breath of the Wild sequels and remakes of Ocarina of Time, but it's a Warriors game.
Oh,
like, I think I'm that's sorry, how man. I get Justin to buy an Xbox.
Hold on. Hyrule Warriors Age of War set before Ocarina of Time during the war that that's orphans Link.
I wanted Hyrule Warriors to be.
Can we play as Link's mom?
Yeah, well, she's a DLC character, and she's like weirdly provocatively dressed, but yes.
I think I'm the only person that kept any tabs on my rankings, but I was looking at it today and I made some changes. Twilight Princess still in the bottom spot, Ocarina of Time right before it, Wind Waker before that, and I think Skyward Sword and Wind Waker are still pretty close for me. But I think in the context of what I would rather play in this moment, I'd put Skyward Sword in the three spot behind Majora's Breath of the Wild.
I'm trying to think about where Skyward Sword goes on my list, and it's very, very difficult to place because I do kind of sympathize with like this isn't necessarily what I come to Zelda for. So in a list of Zelda games, it doesn't check a lot of the boxes, so I don't want to put it too high, but like it is a fantastic standalone game.
I think on the opposite of that, I think that's part of the reason why I think it goes up a notch because I feel like my top three in Breath of the Wild, Majora's Mask, and Skyward Sword, they all scratch different itches.
Mm. Yep. We have the same top three, and I do think that I think Skyward
Wind Waker,
Sword
Wind Waker is very close to Skyward
yes.
Sword.
The angle that I'm coming from at where it's like Majora's Mask is easily like at the top of my list. Yep. And it does so many different and unique things while also still being a really good Zelda game. So that's where I'm kind of like, I don't know how to rank Skyward Sword in that.
I do feel like in my mind, like Breath of the Wild, Majora's Mask, and Skyward Sword are all in different categories. Because I do think that as far as the Zelda formula set up by Link to the Past, when it broke Zelda, Skyward Sword, I think, is kind of the peak of that formula.
Agreed.
And I don't think that's what Majora's Mask is. I think Majora's Mask is better, but I don't think it's that formula.
I don't know if I'd say it's the peak of the formula as much as it's the extreme of the formula.
Sure. I think it's... Looking back on it, it's my favorite of that formula, which I don't think I knew. But I do think it eclipses Wind Waker for
me. Does it have enough of an overworld to count?
Well, I don't think the Link to the Past formula requires an overworld, because ultimately the Link to the Past formula is, hi, welcome to the world. Go to this dot. Cool, you did that. Go to the next dot.
Well, and that's where it's so weird to like have this conversation, though, and that Skyward Sword is like the only data point that doesn't have that overworld.
Yeah, but the overworld doesn't. I don't know that the overworld. I think it's like a refined
feature? not a necessity.
I don't think the overworld is required for the formula. I think that's weirdly what Skyward Sword sorted. Showed.
I don't know, because I spent a lot of time tonight talking about how I could see how Skyward Sword doesn't scratch that the Zelda itch for a lot of people because it doesn't have that exploration stuff as much. And that's
I think that people oversell how much actual exploration there is in Link to the Past and Ocarina of Time. Like,
well, I'm also thinking about how in Twilight Princess I actively think Hyrule Field is bad. And I don't have a desire to spend much time in it. So especially when I played it for the purposes of this game club, playing Twilight Princess was basically treating it like it was the overworld was like the sky in Skyward Sword, where it was going from point A to B to C to D to E. that is a little bit the way I'm playing that game. But at the end of the day, if we're comparing Twilight Princess to Skyward Sword, is what executed the Zelda formula better for me? Well, it's Skyward Sword every day of the week.
I think for me, it's less a literal overworld and more downtime. Like it needs a point where I'm not like actively puzzle solving or advancing the story. Like it needs a liminal space. And I
think that's a failing of Skyward Sword ultimately.
Yeah.
Like I agree with you there.
And I guess I could say that it could simultaneously benefit from it, while the detriment of it not having it isn't enough to make it not the best of that formula, if that makes sense. Like would it be better with one? Yes. Is it still better than the next best linear Zelda without it? Also, okay. Yes.
I understand your point A to point B there. I don't think I agree with you subjectively, sure. But I get where you're coming from.
Okay.
So
I can't agree that the dungeons are the best.
Oh, so. The dungeon. If we're ranking by dungeons, then Skyward Sword just like shits on the grave of everything else.
What I have found fun about, I mean, now that we've kind of the next one's Breath of the Wild, like we've done the Link to the Past formula 3D Zelda games. They're all different. And that's cool.
Except for Twilight Princess.
Maybe even that, it's different because it sucks. No.
Twilight Princess was bold enough to let us run and swing the sword at the same time.
That's true.
And I think more games should let me run with scissors.
That is, yes, you're absolutely right.
It's the only one with the neck snapping cutscene.
True. Someday we'll know what it means.
Yeah. I doubt it. I'm going to die before I know what that means.
Guy's going to like come out of a gutter and just be like, I'll tell you.
I secretly hope it doesn't mean anything. He was just trying to see what he could get away with.
It's actually a keyframing bug. Like he was meant to just kind of lean his head over, but he like put two linear frames right next to each other on accident and it just like shot over to that frame.
Then who put the sound effect there?
Well, that came afterwards. The sound design team was like, well, I guess there has to be a sound effect here, right?
I don't know why his head moved like that, but I got to put something there.
Did you do yours, Alex?
Mine hasn't really changed at all. It's Twilight Princess at the bottom. Skyward Sword is right after that. I think if you shave off like 6 hours at an overworld, then Skyward Sword could go up by like two places. But then we're talking about a very different game. And we've already gotten into it, but like the overworld is very important to me, which is why Breath of the Wild is at the very top. Yep. Ocarina of Time is right after Skyward Sword in the middle there. Wind Waker after that, Majora's second place, and Breath of the Wild very top. And I'm playing the Breath of the Wild right now, and it solidifies that game deserves its place at the peak of my list.
I am giddy to get to playing Breath of the Wild, which baseball got in the way with MLB the Show, and I think I might literally be at the door before the final boss is out of Blade 3. I'm not letting myself.
I thought you were gonna say the final boss of baseball. It's like, whoa,
who is the final boss?
MLB the Show is different than I thought.
Babe Ruth,
Barry Bonds. On all the tubes.
It's actually, I mean, the Negro League storylines are a big part, so maybe you fight Jackie Robinson you pair up with Jackie Robinson to fight racism. That's the end boss of MLB the Show 23. But anyway, very excited to start Breath of the Wild, and as I will keep on saying this because it's basically what my life is going to be very soon. I'm just going to be in a Zelda coma until like sometime in June.
It's a good coma to be in.
It's going to be a real fun coma as long as Tears of the Kingdom doesn't disappoint.
I hope then Tears of the Kingdom has an ending.
Oh,
it'd be nice if that game. I live it like just thinking back on Breath of the Wild and be like, boy, that was a great time until it ended. And I just kind of went, huh.
I kept on being like, is there like going to be a post? Oh, that was the post.
Yeah.
What?
Yeah.
Then that's going to do us for this deluxe sized version of Connectivity talking about, you know, your Tears of the Kingdom 10-minute Anuma cut thing, as well as The Legend of Zelda Skyward Sword for our 3D Zelda Game Club. Join us as we will be talking about The Legend of Zelda Breath of the Wild, but not probably the end of April is when we're going to record that, around when a little bit before Tears of the Kingdom comes out. You can join us in our Discord. You can find a link on NintendoWorldReport.com to get over there. We are talking about our time playing these games there, and we'll be doing more game clubs in the future. And if you have any listener mail you want to send in about Skyward Sword or anything else related to Nintendo, send it over to connectivity@NintendoReport.com. Thank you, Matt.
Yeah.
Thank you, Alex.
Yeah.
And thank you, John.
Hey, wait a minute. Bye.
That is, yeah, bye.